This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, December 5th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. Representative Adam Schiff, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, conducted 2 months of depositions from 17 former and current State Department and White House officials, 12 of whom testified publicly. On Tuesday, Schiff bluntly summarized the committee's findings in a report that said the impeachment inquiry has found that President Trump personally and acting through agents within and outside of the U.S. government solicited the interference of a foreign government, Ukraine, to benefit his reelection. The most remarkable of the witnesses called was Fiona Hill, who until last summer served as Trump's top advisor on Russia and Europe. Hill had this to say in her opening statement on November 21st.
The impact of the successful 2016 Russian campaign remains evident today. Our nation is being torn apart. Truth is questioned. Our highly professional and expert career foreign service is being undermined. U.S. support for Ukraine, which continues to face armed Russian aggression, has been politicized.
She continued,
right now, Russia's security services and their proxies have geared up to repeat their interference in the 2020 election. We are running out of time to stop them. In the course of this investigation, I would ask that you please not promote politically driven falsehoods that so clearly advance Russian interests.
Susan Glasser joins me from Washington to discuss what we know about Trump's potentially impeachable offenses and what we still don't know, and whether there is sufficient evidence to impeach the president. Susan, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Dorothy.
So after all of that testimony, we know a lot more about the Trump administration's back-channel operations in Ukraine. But I think that even people who have been following the proceedings pretty closely have trouble sorting it all out. So I'd like to begin by asking you, what is now incontrovertible, except to those driving the fictional narrative that Hill talks about Trump's dealings with Ukraine?
Well, look, I think it's very striking that in a short amount of time, they were able to get a large pile of evidence, all of which essentially tends to confirm, reinforce, and fill in the picture that was immediately apparent when we saw the White House-generated record of his July 25th phone call with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and the whistleblower's complaint. We started out with the allegation that the President of the United States had essentially subverted American foreign policy for his own personal political interests and that he had conditioned U.S. actions on this personal favor, as he called it, that he was demanding of the Ukrainian president. There's a lot of on-the-record testimony, as well as some emails and documents suggesting Trump personally ordered the withholding of the aid. We know that he personally ordered the early ouster of his ambassador to Ukraine in the spring at the behest of his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani.
That's Marie Yovanovitch, the ambassador.
That's right. And we know that it was Trump himself who told U.S. government officials, his ambassador to the EU and his special envoy to Ukraine to work.
That's Gordon Sondland, correct?
That's right. So he ordered these folks, the quote-unquote three amigos, as they would become known, to work with Rudy Giuliani in a May 23rd, I believe, Oval Office meeting. That was Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the EU, Kurt Volker, the special envoy to Ukraine, and number three, Rick Perry, at the time, the energy secretary. Those were the three folks that had been the U.S. delegation to the inauguration of the new Ukrainian president because of another action that Donald Trump took, still unexplained. He told Zelensky in a brief congratulatory phone call this spring, oh, yeah, I'm going to send the vice president to you and a really high-level delegation for your inauguration. Congratulations. Inexplicably, then Trump ordered Pence not to go to the inauguration, and instead he sent this low-level delegation instead, Rick Perry, Gordon Sondland, Kurt Volker. When they came back, they tried to persuade Trump, hey, listen, this guy's a reformer. We could do business with him. And Trump shocks them. And he says, listen, you guys, you work with Rudy on this. He's my guy on this. Rudy's the guy I want, essentially, to be in charge of Ukraine policy.
What do we know about why he barred Pence from attending Zelensky's inauguration?
We don't know more. We believe, and Rudy has been quoted in various places as suggesting that, you know, this was part of their leverage campaign. They were trying to force Ukraine to do what they wanted, which was politically motivated investigations. So in June, early July, the early summer, that's when they freeze the aid. There's a lot of machinations. The three amigos are still trying to get Trump to meet with Zelensky. And what they're hearing back essentially is no. As Gordon Sondland said, there is a quid pro quo for that meeting. Unless Zelensky agrees to the investigations, he's not going to get the meeting. So then they say, well, let's try to set up this phone call.
So some argue, including some Democrats, that all of this is not enough to impeach the president. Yesterday, Jonathan Turley was one of four constitutional experts testifying before the House Judiciary Committee, the only Republican witness allowed by Nadler. He said that the Democrats don't have enough evidence that Trump committed bribery in his dealings with Ukraine and that the record does not establish obstruction in this case. So it is true, as I understand it, that there thus far has been no John Dean, you know, there is a cancer on the president moment, partly because, or largely because, members of Trump's innermost circle have complied with his demand that they not testify.
Well, there has been very compelling testimony from senior Trump administration officials. There is an increasing set of questions around essentially the political decision to move forward with impeachment while it's clear there is still more information that is potentially gettable. In fact, just this week in the report from the House Intelligence Committee, which was issued on Tuesday, they produced new evidence in that they obtained phone records that showed Giuliani having phone calls with an OMB phone number, obviously leading to the speculation that perhaps he was discussing the military aid that would then be withheld by the president. But we don't know that. There's a lot of things we don't know. Rick Perry, the energy secretary, never subpoenaed. John Bolton, the national security advisor, never subpoenaed. The secretary of state, Mike Pompeo, who was on the phone call, never subpoenaed. Mick Mulvaney, the White House chief of staff, who said publicly in that memorable press conference, remember that, in fact, they had linked the military assistance with the investigations and basically told America to get over it. Well, he has not been subpoenaed. So, you know, there are real questions about, well, is this just accepting the reality that Trump's stonewalling has been effective? The House says they're going to proceed and basically make obstruction of Congress one of the articles of impeachment as their way of addressing the incompleteness of the investigation.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
Susan, I want to get back to John Bolton. His lawyer said that Bolton knows about many relevant meetings and conversations about Ukraine that members of Congress are still unaware of. It was clear from Fiona Hill's testimony that Bolton, as you said, strongly opposed Giuliani's freelance diplomacy. What information could he provide, and why is he being so cagey about not going before Congress?
I think it in a way, it's sort of one of those examples that stands for the whole situation right now. Here's a guy who clearly opposed what Trump was doing, who didn't want anything to do with it, who didn't want his staff to have anything to do with it. And yet, you know, he's refused to do what his subordinates saw as their legally and constitutionally obligated duty. This is a guy who signed a $2 million book deal. Clearly, he's going to be airing at least his policy differences with Trump. And it just, it seems like one of these incredibly, like, cynical, you know, kind of greedy things. And, you know, Bolton seems to be basically saying it's not in what he perceives to be his interests, and he's just not going to do it, even though he clearly has stated he has valuable evidence that the public should need to know about.
So is he thinking about his own political future? What's he got in mind?
You know, it's a good question. He has reemerged in public recently, last week, tantalizing people on Twitter. He has relaunched his Super PAC, which is a PAC that raises money and spends it on behalf of Republican and conservative candidates. And perhaps he sees it in his own political interest not to alienate potential donors to his Super PAC, many of whom, I guess, are diehard Republicans. Perhaps they're supporters of Trump still. You know, so he's not clarified his motives, but they do seem to be political in nature.
So Secretary of State Mike Pompeo keeps popping up as a participant in the administration's Ukraine conversations. You wrote about him for The New Yorker in August. What has emerged through these hearings about how Mike Pompeo conducts diplomacy? He didn't exactly go to bat for Marie Yovanovitch, the ambassador to Ukraine.
No, he didn't. I actually had spoken with a number of my contacts from Russia days about the ouster of Marie Yovanovitch in the course of reporting the Pompeo profile, because even this summer, without knowing anything that we would later learn about the withholding of the aid and the like, it was a very unusual episode. And it really didn't go down well with professional diplomats who were shocked that a three-time ambassador, which is what Marie Yovanovitch was, in other words, one of the most senior members of the Foreign Service, had been summarily forced out of her position for what was clearly a political campaign. Remember, Giuliani was doing this in public on Fox News. The president's son was hate tweeting about our ambassador to Ukraine. This was a crazy situation. But, you know, it quickly became clear, and it was certainly clear for me in talking with people who were familiar with Pompeo's work in the Trump administration, that, you know, his priority has been and will remain pleasing the president. And he just wasn't going to risk any of his capital with Trump on behalf of his staff. We've also learned that Pompeo has not been forthcoming with even basic information. For example, he gave initially interviews about Trump's phone call without admitting that he had actually been listening on the phone call himself. He's had very hostile interactions with reporters who dared to ask him even basic questions about this very significant foreign policy controversy.
Tell us a little bit, too, about Devin Nunes, who is another unsavory character in this drama.
Well, Devin Nunes is, you know, really fascinating because he appears to be both a senior congressional actor in this drama and in some way that we don't yet fully understand, actually involved with the plotters themselves. It was just an incredible revelation this week. He is the senior Republican, the top Republican, and former chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Well, the report issued this week by his Democratic counterparts on the House Intelligence Committee revealed that Nunes was on phone calls, not only with Rudy Giuliani as this plot against Marie Yovanovitch was playing out, but also with Giuliani's sort of shadowy Ukraine associate, Lev Parnas, who has subsequently been arrested for campaign finance violations of allegedly illegally funneling money to Trump-affiliated campaigns.
That brings us to the key protagonist in this affair, as we've been discussing, Rudy Giuliani, who right now is in Europe consorting with the very people he's under scrutiny for interacting with on Trump's behalf. What is he doing?
You know, it's certainly when the history of the Trump era is written, the word brazen is going to appear a lot of times. Giuliani is not only on a European trip. Yesterday, as the House of Representatives is having a hearing on impeaching the president, he was in Ukraine. He was in Ukraine itself. He appears to be making some sort of a pro-Trump, anti-impeachment documentary with some of the very same characters who were feeding him this information in Ukraine. The merger of public and private interests and the intervening in the complicated, swirling politics of an Eastern European country at war with Russia is just, if it was in a novel, you'd probably reject it as being too implausible.
And all of this is part of this animated debate that's going on about whether Schiff and Pelosi should, as planned, limit their scope to Trump's interactions with Ukraine. What are the pros and cons of including an article of impeachment that would, let's say, charge Trump with hindering Congress in its constitutional role in conducting an impeachment inquiry?
Well, so this is, you're spotlighting the issue that's really going to dominate next week. Next week is when we're really going to find out what exactly this impeachment is going to be. That's when the Judiciary Committee is going to begin to draw up and to outline the articles of impeachment. In the testimony yesterday, the very first hearing that the House Judiciary Committee has held in this impeachment inquiry, the counsel for the Judiciary Committee, Norm Eisen, suggested that they were looking at three articles of impeachment. One would be around Ukraine. One would be obstruction of Congress related to the Ukraine investigation. That's refusing to allow testimony and documents from any executive agency. And then the third, most controversial, he suggested would be an obstruction of justice article, presumably having to do with the alleged 10 alleged acts of obstruction outlined in the Mueller report. And on Monday, what's going to happen, we just heard from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, is that the House Judiciary Committee is going to hear counsels for all of the various committees that have investigated Trump present their evidence. So that presumably includes counsel for the Judiciary Committee, who's going to talk about the Mueller-related obstruction of justice.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Susan B. Glasser is a staff writer at The New Yorker. She writes a weekly column on Trump's Washington and is the co-author of Kremlin Rising, Vladimir Putin's Russia and the End of Revolution. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Alex Barron and Kylie Warner for newyorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.